are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
Yeah, I'm doing well, despite the fact that the Giants may never win another baseball game. I'm coping with it somehow, but it's pretty grim.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
I already touted myself with the rankings, so I wasn't going to throw that out there, too. I mean, I wasn't going to go through it. It's like, yeah, I've been nominated for awards for my writing, and our radio show was Radio Show of the Year, and my...
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
So I appreciate that you did that for me.
Well, that's kind of my job as the host, to kind of talk up the person I bring on. Because otherwise, people are like, who's this dick that's on?
Well, that's pretty much what I get normally anyway.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm Justin Mason, the fantasy writer and analyst for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me on this episode are Chuck and Darius. Chuck, how you doing?
I am fabulous. It's good to be back with you guys, and not just a listener like I was last week, so I'm excited.
It's good to have you back, buddy. Darius, thanks. How are you doing, my friend?
Yeah, I'm doing well, despite the fact that the Giants may never win another baseball game. I'm coping with it somehow, but it's pretty grim.
Yeah, I'm just waiting for the selling to start, and I've been pretty dismayed about this whole season and writing about it a whole bunch and talking about it. So let's move on to something that's a little bit less depressing for me. And let's talk some fantasy baseball. And we have a special guest today, and that is Jake Seeley of rotoexperts.com. Jake, how you doing?
I'm doing good. Yeah, I'm doing much better than the Giants. You know, it's funny, somebody asked me the other day, and they said, what's the most surprising team so far? And everybody always wants to throw out the winners and say, oh, it's the Yankees or the Reds are contending for first. The Giants are the most surprising to me. If you would have told me that they had the worst record in the league at this point of the season, I would have said you're out of your damn mind.
Yeah, I mean, losing Bumgarner is a real killer, but the rest of the team in itself is just pretty much falling apart, which isn't something I necessarily didn't expect. I just didn't necessarily... I had expected it a couple seasons ago. I just figured at some point their championship runs would have caught up to them, and... I was actually a little bit excited for this year because I felt like the West was winnable, but oh well.
Yeah, it is, just by somebody else.
Yeah,
like the Rockies or the Dodgers.
Yeah, the other 2 to 3 teams that are actually halfway decent in the division. Jake, why don't you tell people a little bit about yourself for those who don't know who you are, and then where you can be reached on social media.
Yeah, I am the all-time best ranker in the history of the world. You can follow
me. Pretty much, right?
Hey, for baseball purposes, right? You know, back-to-back number 1 years. I'll take that for baseball. Top 5 for football, not quite as good. But at rotoexperts.com, the senior writer over there, you can find me on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network every single day from 11 to 1 for On Target. I actually had Justin on the show while we were up there covering Tout Wars and Good Times in New York, so you can find me there. I'm on the Fantasy Sports Network at times, and of course on Twitter, at AllInKid, and yes, that is a poker reference.
And you guys, your radio show won, like, Best Radio Show of the Year. So not only
I already touted myself with the ranking, so I wasn't going to throw that out there, too. I mean, I wasn't going to go through it. It's like, yeah, I've been nominated for awards for my writing, and our radio show was Radio Show of the Year. And my I appreciate that you did that for me.
Well, that's kind of my job as the host, to kind of talk up the person I bring on. Because otherwise, people are like, who's this dick that's on?
Well, that's pretty much what I get normally anyway.
Exactly. So, you know, it's my responsibility as a host to kind of talk you up a little bit. But thank you for joining us. We're going to just jump right in and talk about a bunch of players today. Let's start with Zach Cozart, who has started off pretty well so far this season. His triple slash is .350, .442, .580, hitting 2 home runs and 2 stolen bases so far. Jake, what are your thoughts on Zach Cozart so far?
I am a fan, and he needs to be owned in every single league, 12 teams and up, and maybe even some deeper 10-teamers as a middle infielder. Heck, in a 15-teamer, he could be your starting shortstop, honestly. And whatever it is, I don't know what exactly the reason is, like what he did differently in the offseason. Nobody has written about it, I've been able to, I guess, figure out what the difference is in his plate approach. But something is different in the fact that he's walking significantly more than he ever has for his entire career. You look at some of his full season walk totals, and we're talking 14, 25, and stuff like that. He's already got 18 this year. His walk percentage is up at 15%, which is almost as close to his strikeout percentage. He's never been a high strikeout guy, but to have that kind of plate discipline is part of the reason why I'm buying into the improvement in average. Do I think he's going to hit 350? Obviously not. That's not going to happen. Now, he can get near 300. I definitely think it could happen. And he still hasn't hit for power too much yet with only two home runs. This is the same guy that hit 16 last year in only 121 games. And if you look at his swinging strike percentage, it's at an all-time low for his career, a full 2 percentage points under his career average. So something happened in the offseason. Something he changed with his plate approach. I don't know. Maybe he got LASIK and we don't know. But something's going on where he's just seeing the ball better than he ever has. And the contact is coming with that. And he looks like he's just waiting for his pitches. And when they're not there, he's happy to take the walk, which is great to see from any hitter. So I'm a full believer. I have him as my starting shortstop in both labor and tout wars.
Oh, wow. I drafted against you in tout, so I didn't even remember that you had gotten him, but he's been a nice bargain for anybody who's invested in him.
Or maybe I'm lying. Maybe it's another one. I get those leagues confused. Hold on. Now you're going to make me double check. So
you double check. I'll throw it to Darius. Darius, are you in agreement on Zach Cozart?
Yeah, I really like what he's doing. I sort of wonder if he sat down with Joey Votto a lot over the offseason and talked about swinging less at pitches or how to improve your plate discipline, because something's definitely happened. Yeah, I pretty much agree with Jake. I like what he's done a lot. The other thing I was worried about was his speed, and I think he's hit 4 triples already, stole a couple of bases, so there doesn't seem to be any lingering effects of his knee issues that he had. So I like all of that, really. The main question for me is how long is he going to be in Cincinnati, and will he move somewhere else which isn't quite so homer-friendly, and maybe that caps his value a little bit. But in terms of the changes he's made with his plate discipline, I think they're great, and especially in low BP league, you've got to love him right now.
Chuck, what are your thoughts on Zach Cozart?
Well, I saw all the numbers that you guys spoke of, and a different number jumped off the page at me. Last year, he had 67 runs scored in 121 games. He's got 21 runs scored in 29 games this year. You know, I think the Reds are right up there as the most underrated offense in all of baseball. And I feel really bad talking to two Giants fans who can't generate 21 runs scored, you know, in a 2-week period, that the Reds, I mean, it's like a track meet when Peraza and Hamilton are out there. You know, traditionally we've had some slow starts from Joey Votto. Well, guess what? That hasn't happened. Duval is the guy who, you know, Adam is supposed to, you know, I don't know, he fell off at the end of last year. Guess what? He got back on the horse. You got Schebler stealing bases last night. I mean, everything is going nuts as far as their offense is concerned. And it's all it can do is help people. I'm a shareholder in one Zach Cozart. I've thought he was really underrated. You know, I thought last year, you know, he's kind of recovering from that knee stuff that happened in 2015. So if he's available in your shallower leagues, scoop him up. If somebody wants to throw him in a trade, I say go ahead and grab him. I think he's a legitimate major league hitter, and he's off to a great start.
And just for reference, when the Reds and the Giants played a series against each other last week, the Reds scored 31 runs on the Giants in 3 games. So that always boosts your value a little bit. I've always liked Cozart. Cozart's been a guy that I have gone to bat for multiple seasons in a row. I'm still buying. I love what you guys said about his plate discipline. The one stat you guys didn't mention, which is just an improvement on a skill he already had, is he's not swinging outside the zone. He's swinging outside the zone less than 25% of the time. So he's not chasing pitches. He's making good contact. He's got his best contact percentage since coming into the league in 2011. My only concern is the same as Darius, is if he ends up on another team, does he lose value because the park won't probably be as good unless he ends up in a place, I don't know, Yankee, well, can't end up with the Yankees because they've got a middle infield, can't end up with the Rockies, so more than likely he goes to a worse park factor park. So that's not going to deter me from going out and getting him if he's available or picking him up, because I think he still doesn't have the name value that he probably should at this point. I think you could probably buy him for pretty cheap from a guy who has maybe an extra middle infielder.
Well, and the part I was going to say the part that we, to reference the run total to go along with that. Here's the thing that can offset his potential decrease, because obviously we don't think he's going to hit 350. But as long as the Reds keep him hitting number two in front of Joey Votto, that run total will be able to sustain any type of lost increase in, you know, the, or I should say decrease in the average, as long as they keep Peraza hitting down where he should and not hitting number two behind Hamilton. Now, if they start screwing around with that, or to the other point that was made, if he is traded and now he's on a new team hitting sixth or seventh, that is going to hurt that. But for right now, I think the fact that they've been using him in the two hole more recently, that that's going to help offset when he obviously takes a little bit of a step back. Maybe he has a quiet week.
How about full disclosure as well, that his BABIP is 423 and that his WOBA is 431. So, I mean, while we think he's a good hitter and he's been undervalued in recent years, you know, and Jake pointed this out as well, he's not going to hit 350. He's probably a 285, 290 kind of hitter in the long run.
Which is still fine, because if I'm remembering correctly, I think he was going outside like the top 250 hitters. You know, on draft day.
Oh, so definitely.
I mean, you've already started to make back the majority of what you invested.
Absolutely.
Let's move on to Nate Karns, who's had an up and down season so far this year. A lot of people are really high on him coming into the year. Chuck, what have you seen so far from Nate Karns?
Well, what rumor has it that he's using quite a bit different mix of pitches. I mean, he's been labeled as a two-pitch guy. There was a lot of excitement about him when he first went out to Seattle, and he couldn't hold the job there last year. Well, of course, Seattle's had some problems with, you know, had some problems with their pitching health, et cetera, and so forth this year, but he ended up in Kansas City, whereas Kansas City's a great place to play. It's not a good place for run support. There is, you know, he's only got 35 innings so far this year. But you have to love the K per nine being over, you know, being over a K an inning, and you have to like, you know, 3-1 over 3-1 for strikeout to bases on balls. So career high 56.7 ground ball percentage, a lot to like with that. And he hasn't even really completely lucked out, because his home run to fly ball percentage is still almost 20%, which means he has had either a little bit of misfortune or has been a little bit too easy to hit in the zone. So Nate Karns is a guy, I mean, you got to roll the bones outside of the top 40 or 50 pitchers right now, because there's too many star quality players are hurt or vastly underperforming. So Nate Karns is as good a guess as anyone right now.
Jake, are you willing to roll the dice on Nate Karns?
Yeah, I actually almost traded for him last week, and then the trade got hung up because stupid Michael Brantley had to go and twist his ankle at first base. He was part of the trade, too. So the guy backed out because he couldn't afford to lose an outfielder. But I was going to get Nate Karns in a trade. I was giving up Kyle Hendricks to take a little bit of hit of the pitching to make up value elsewhere. But I was happy to get Nate Karns, because what he was just talking about is the fact that he was pretty much a two-pitch pitcher. And the big difference between him this year is he's thrown that changeup a lot more than he ever used to. And now he's kind of got a 50-50 split between his fastball and the off-speed stuff being the curveball and the changeup. And his curveball and changeup are the two pitches that are positive run values. The fastball is still what's always given him a problem when you sit around 92, 93, and you don't have a lot of movement, as Karns does. His fastball has always given him problems. That's been the pitch that hitters do the best against. And now that his changeup has really started to become an effective pitch, it's actually become his best pitch so far this year, which has only helped the curveball. So he's become more of a junk thrower, which is really helping him. And that's what I like. Yeah, he hasn't been consistent in his performance to date. And you mentioned the home run concerns, but the home run should normalize. As we all know, you always come back to your home run to fly ball rate somewhere in that range. And he's been a little bit unlucky in that department so far. But I think you're going to get a lot more good starts than you will bad. He's not an ace. He's not a top 25 pitcher. But I think we're definitely looking at the potential for his best season yet. And that's a good reason. Everything I just talked about is why his xFIP is a good amount, almost a full run lower than his ERA. He's pitching better than what he has been so far.
Darius, what are your thoughts on Nate Karns?
Yeah, I agree. I think he's been a bit unlucky. The skills look nice. I certainly like the increased usage of the changeup and the curve. I think he's got a bit more separation on the changeup there as well. And his ground ball rate's gone up too. So I think that combined with the strikeout rate means there's some pretty nice upside here. I think maybe you still want to pick and choose your starts a bit, but he's certainly in a division where I think you're going to have at least a couple of teams that aren't very good. Certainly I'm going to be trying to get him if he's starting against the White Sox. So yeah, I'm pretty interested in Carnes, and I think he's got some nice upside for certainly a good amount of strikeouts, and I think there's potential there for more.
Yeah, I'm gonna be the guy who reins on the parade a little bit. I don't like Nate Carnes. I think they should have kept him as a reliever. They should have put Matt Strom into the rotation. I mean, the one thing in his real benefit is the rotation for the Royals is absolutely atrocious, and so I don't think Carnes is going anywhere and is going to be moved out of the rotation anytime soon when you've got guys like Jason Hamill and Chris Young manning the three and four spots in your rotation. But I don't like guys with bad fastballs, and like Jake alluded to, he has a bad fastball. And I know the park will normalize some of the or kind of cover up some of the warts, but I worry that we're going to be seeing any day now the Royals, who are one of the worst teams in baseball, start to sell a lot of their pieces because they've got a lot of guys going into free agency. Wins are going to be hard to come by. There are going to be blow-up starts. He's never going to be a guy who is going to be a number three starter for your fantasy team. I just don't see the upside worth the downside for me, and so I'm out on Nate Carnes. Let's go ahead and move on and talk about Tommy Pham, who's coming into a little bit playing time right now because of injuries within the Cardinals outfield. Jake, what are your thoughts on Tommy Pham?
Tommy Pham is your prototypical quad A player. There's a reason he has this many at-bats in the minor leagues, because he's just not good enough to stick in the majors, in my opinion. And then you can look at every single, it's a very, very small sample size, but nobody needs to be told when you have a BABIP of 500 and ISO of 600. I don't care who you are. Nobody's sustaining that. We only have five games to go on, and you know he's on a little bit of a hot streak. He's one of those guys that you go up, you pick up, you ride the hot streak. You might have even missed it at this point. You might pick him up, and he turns it back into the Tommy Pham we've always known. But he's never going to hit for double-digit home runs. He did one time way back at the beginning of his career in the minors. But you want to say, the reason I say way back, this guy, I think it was 2007, 2008. This guy is just a quad A guy. He's going to come in and fill in when you need him to. He's going to have a hot streak like most players do. Everybody has hot streaks now and then. You know, he might be the Sam Fold of this year. You might get him for 3 weeks of a hot streak, maybe even four, but that's all you're going to get out of him. Ride him while you can if you need the help in that position. Otherwise, you know, don't go crazy with your free agent auction budget. Don't blow your top waiver spot, because he's going to be right back on the waivers in a week or two.
Darius, what are your thoughts on Tommy Pham?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a guy who hasn't really had a great deal of playing time. He was drafted in 2006, and he's still got less than 400 plate appearances. I think partly that's some performance related, but I also think he's had a lot of injuries to battle through, and he's rarely played a full season, really. So I think that's affected his playing time. But that kind of feeds into something else that I'm worried about, which is what's going to happen when Stephen Piscotty and Dexter Fowler are back. We've already got Randall Grichuk out there. The Cards have got plenty of guys they can keep playing. I'm sure they'll send Magnaris Sierra down, but I think there's a lot of parts there, and too many for him to get full-time playing time. So I think there might be a decent amount of power and speed if they played him, and we haven't really seen him enough in the majors to know what else he could be. But I just think that at most this is going to be 2 or 3 weeks, and when those guys are back, he's not going to be playing anymore.
Chuck, thoughts on Tommy Pham?
Well, the Cardinals went to the length of trying to put big city Matt Adams out in the outfield earlier in the year. So when your team is like trying to build blocks for you to not get playing time like that, I don't think that's a very good sign. You know, he's been a traditional cup of coffee / emergency sixth outfielder fill-in type. And, you know, while he hasn't had an extended look or what have you, I got to believe that he's the kind of sort of Major League Baseball tumbleweed that will eventually end up either in San Diego or Oakland, hanging out with Jeff Decker and guys like that. So my guts tell me that, you know, this is the kind of guy that the one person in your league that it's his first year playing fantasy baseball, and all of a sudden he's, you know, he sees Tommy Pham come out and have 2 or 3 hot games, jumps on it, and, you know, thinks he's going to lean on him for a while. Tommy Pham is exactly as the other guys have mentioned. He's not really a major league player. He's 29 years old already.
Yeah, I, you know, part of me wants to kind of jump on the Darius's train and say this guy hasn't ever gotten a fair shake. Because, I mean, let's be honest, he really hasn't. I mean, he's never gotten more than, what, like 183 plate appearances at the major league level in one season. And when he did that last year, he actually did fairly well with 9 home runs and two stolen bases. But I think the Cardinals organization doesn't have any faith in him. He would need a change of scenery in order to get extended playing time, because unless someone gets hurt for an entire season, there's just not an opening within the Cardinals system. And so, you know, if you ride in the hot streak right now, go ahead and continue to do that. But know that as soon as Piscotty comes back, as soon as Fowler is completely healthy, that Pham is probably going to be relegated back to the bench, in, you know, no matter how poorly like Randall Grichuk plays. All right, let's move on to the next guy, and we will discuss Matt Moore, who was supposed to be a mainstay in the Giants' rotation this year and has been just a pitching machine up there in San Francisco. Jake, what are your thoughts on Matt Moore?
I'm going to go to Happy Gilmore in this one, where he's on the microphone at the beginning of the movie talking to his ex-girlfriend leaving the place, and she says, "Face it, Happy, you're just not any good." That's Matt Moore. Let's face it, he's just not any good. We've been trying to make Matt Moore happen ever back to that one great season he had where he won 17 games. But even if you look at that season, walked way too many guys, was actually a bit fortunate that season. Matt Moore is just not what we ever wanted him to be. Sometimes that just happens with players. We always thought Matt Moore was potentially going to be an ace. It just never happened. Injuries may be part of it, but at this point, you talk about Nathan Carnes, you want to talk about a terrible fastball. Matt Moore's fastball is god-awful, and it's getting destroyed this year. And the fact is, he's trying to mix in this cutter. That's not helping. He's doing all these different things. It's just not working. He's just not fooling anybody. The velocity is down a little bit, which we all know. When you see the velocity down this year, that means it's actually down even more than what you realize, because they did the switch over to the StatCast, which is a little bit of the difference in the speed going up. Everybody was talking about that in the preseason, is the fact that during spring training, everybody's velocity was up 1 mile to 2 miles per hour. So if it's down, it means it's even worse. So you just look at everything with Matt Moore, and he's just not that good of a pitcher. I bought in. I thought that he could at least be a starting pitcher 5 for a fantasy team, especially pitching in San Francisco, and the fact that he was somewhat successful. He still had a 4 ERA, but he was somewhat successful when he came over. But the interesting thing, when he came over last year, the strikeouts went up, but so did the walks. And the walks are up to about 3.5 per inning again this year. He's just never been a control guy, and it's always one of the others. Like, the strikeouts come down and the walks come down, but then the strikeouts go up and the walks come up. I don't understand him, but like I said, it just might be the Happy Gilmore thing. Just face it, you're not any good.
Yeah, unfortunately, I bought in for some reason this year, even though when they made the trade for him last year, I was just screaming at the rooftops how much I hated it. You know, they pretty much made the trade because they were trying to compete with the Dodgers, and the Dodgers can't hit left-handed pitching. And so they sold some valuable pieces, including Matt Duffy and a minor league prospect that I really like, in order to get Matt Moore. And it hasn't worked out. You know, I think a lot of the appeal was the idea that he was moving to the National League, that he was moving to a stadium that would hide a lot of the homer problems. But like you mentioned, he just walks way too many guys and gives up way too much hard contact. I agree that the drop in velocity is a little concerning. We have to remember this is a guy that got Tommy John surgery 3 years ago. And, you know, he's about to enter that window in which the Tommy John when Tommy John guys get Tommy John again for the second time, usually. So I wish I hadn't bought in, because it was just one of those things where everybody kept telling me, "Oh, you're just too down on Matt Moore. You're too down on Matt Moore." And I got him for cheap in an NL only auction, and now I've got the worst pitching staff in the National League only league, in spite of the fact that I've got Clayton Kershaw in that as well. So, Darius, what are your thoughts on Matt Moore?
Yeah, I was listening to the guys on Monday, actually, and Mike, who obviously is well-documented Rays fan, so he knows Matt Moore very well, and he was saying inconsistency has always been his problem, and I think he's still showing that. It's just not there. Every now and again, it will show you something, and then it goes again. The walks are a symptom of that as well. I think the cutter is actually getting in pretty good results, but there's just nothing else there. And hitters aren't swinging and missing. We've got over 90% contact in the zone against him. And Jake mentioned that the terrible fastball, which, it's definitely not working out for him. So I don't think anyone's buying what he's selling. And I think you've just got to really give up on Matt Moore at this point, because he hasn't shown anything at this stage, even in probably the best park to pitch in the majors at this point, that makes you think he's going to be useful in anything but the deepest of leagues.
You know, and Mike's an asshole too, because Mike was that Rays fan that talked me into him this year. So, Chuck, what are your thoughts on Matt Moore?
Well, to put it in context, it's not that I disagree with what you guys are saying, but, you know, I'm the guy who heavily invested in Noah Syndergaard and Madison Bumgarner this year. And so my pitching staffs are basically like little mini versions of American pickers. Like, I'm just trying to find anything I can find. So I have to keep my eye on guys like this because he does have two really dominant starts. His numbers overall were pretty good when he got to San Francisco last year. I am not heavily invested in him. I do have him in one league, but I'm not heavily invested in him. But I'm going to keep an eye on how he does, because if he starts to string a few good starts together, I'm going to have no choice but to try and look and see when maybe he's going to have a two-start week or when I might have to use him. Because his two dominant starts this year were very, very dominant starts. Unfortunately, he's only got one mediocre start, and the rest of his starts have all been bad. The other thing I would note is that he's staying in San Francisco, because while he's pitching this poorly and this inconsistently, I mean, obviously the Giants are doing nothing this year. So they're going to want people to try and eat innings, etc. So they're going to keep throwing Matt Moore out there. So as much as he's not very good, and everyone's right about that, I'm still going to keep an eye on him, because he's going to run into four or five good start stretch at some point this season, and I want to be aware of it, because my pitching staffs are absolute donkey dookie.
Well, I mean, those four or five good starts will come when they have an extended stretch at home, because both of his good starts this year were at home. So, I mean, you just can't pitch him on the road right now. The park holds enough value in terms of its space for him to kind of cover up those warts, like I mentioned before, but I have no faith in Matt Moore.
Eternal optimism says his XFIP is two runs lower than his ERA.
You're like,
now that's eternal optimism.
You're like one of the most negative people in this entire company.
That's so true. I don't know what happened.
Mention what his XFIP or his ERA is as well.
I did. I said it's two runs. His XFIP is two runs lower than his ERA.
Let's move on to someone who is a little bit more exciting, and that's Aaron Altherr. I didn't understand why people weren't getting on board Aaron Altherr earlier in the off season. A guy who has power and speed potential in a lineup that I know it was a little crowded, especially to start the year in Philadelphia. But you had to think that they would make room for kind of a younger guy in Altherr. Chuck, what have you seen out of Aaron Altherr so far this year?
Well, he's a supremely good defender. He's also a very good base runner. Hasn't completely come to fruition yet in the stolen base department. But he's one of those post-hype guys. We don't have enough patience with these style players. They come up and they get a couple cups of coffee and they don't succeed right away. And we sort of jump off the ship, you know. He's a 26-year-old. Back, you know, 6-7 years ago, you'd think, oh, he's still young. This day and age, most people are getting called up when they're 23 or 24, so it seems like he's old. But he plays in just the right ballpark, despite being in not a great division. He's got some really good things going for him. Again, there's regression coming. He's got a 422 BABIP, but at the same time, for the kind of investment cost that anybody's had that picked him up or that drafted him late, 5 home runs, 17 runs scored, 17 RBIs. There's a lot to like. You know, the walk rate is good. The strikeout rate is nominally bad in this day and age, a quarter of his at bats. It's hard not to like him and think that people gave up on him too soon from everything I've seen, because he's the toolsy type that is going to keep his way in the lineup and fits perfect in sort of a Philadelphia-style rebuild.
And he's already hit another home run today. So, Jake, what are your thoughts on Aaron out there?
Well, the answer to your question is it was the playing time. I would have bought into him a lot more places if I would have known that he would have that type of playing time. And you can make the assumptions that the injuries were going to happen for this team or something was going to open up. But there was no guarantee that he was going to be playing every single day, or that they might not want him to play every single day and even send him back down just to make sure he could keep playing every single day. So that was the biggest thing. Or else I would have owned him a lot more, because I've always been a believer in his talent. As mentioned, he has a little sample size in the majors, and neither of them being a full season because of injuries and other type of situations surrounding him. And you go back to 2015 and then last year, where he hit basically every level of the minors again, just trying to get him back up to speed and everything like that. But he's a real deal player. He's somebody that has, I'd say, mid-teen home run power. He's got, as you mentioned, another one today, so that gives him, what, six? I don't think he's going to all of a sudden hit 25 home runs in the full season. But, maybe he peaks out and gets close to 20. But the real appeal is that he's a 15-15, 15-20 type of guy, and he can hit for a decent average. Both times he's been in the majors, the average hasn't been too great, but he is somebody that, if you look at his minor league track record, you can say he's probably going to be a 270, 280 hitter when everything comes around and he's really come into his own. And I think he's on the way there. You mentioned the age with that type of situation, but this is his getting a shot. He's getting to play every single day, and that's what he needed. And if you're talking about somebody who's going to hit 270, 280 and get you 15 home runs and 20 stolen bases, you need, outfielder three in a lot of leagues, at least an outfielder four in most?
Yeah, I think that's really fair, and I think there's a really good chance that he could keep this job even when guys get healthy. I know Hallie Kendrick's on the DL currently, but I don't think Kendrick is going to necessarily push him off with the way he's been playing. Darius, what are your thoughts on Altair?
Yeah, I'd echo what the other guy said, and I do hope that Kendrick doesn't push him out of playing time. Obviously, they're not going to move Odubel Herrera anywhere, and so it remains to be seen what they're going to do and whether he loses any starts when Kendrick gets back. You'd like to think they wouldn't let Daniel Nava get involved in that. But I don't like to make too many assumptions about what managers may or may not do, because they certainly don't care what fantasy players want. But I love the power speed upside, and I think Jake's right that he's got some decent average potential as well. So yeah, I think this is a potential all-around contributor, and on a team that could, I think, potentially be pretty good.
And full disclosure too, I did invest in him in a number of spots this year, but they were in really deep leagues where you take flyers on guys who may not have playing time, NL only, 15 in team mix and deeper. And I've been really happy, but I wasn't going out in there getting him in shallower formats. I was worried about the playing time as well. So far, so good though. I am worried that the average is going to come tumbling down at some point. And he has shown, sometimes much larger strikeout numbers. And so, if he kind of goes back to a little bit more of his free swing ways, especially if he struggles at any point, you could see the average crash and crater at some point. But right now, it's propped up by just the obscene BABIP that Chuck was talking about, 422, supporting that 343 average. It should come down a good, 60, 70 points at least. So I'm not worried. And I think the Phillies don't have any reason not to keep running him out there and seeing what they've got in him. Kendrick, might be a better kind of bench guy at this point in his career. And I don't know how Daniel Nava is still in the league. Let's talk about another Philly, and that's Jeremy Hellickson, who, was one of those guys who surprisingly took the one-year deal, the qualifying offer deal, even after a great season, and seems to be, somewhat doubling down on it. Jake, what are your thoughts on Jeremy Hellickson?
Get the hell away as fast as you can. Trust me, Jeremy Hellickson is not this good. The biggest thing, so I write every single week on rotoexperts.com, I write about Saab, and it's basically strikeout percent. Actually, it's not basically, it is. It's strikeout percentage minus walk percentage. They put K minus BB percentage on Fangraphs, but Nando DeFino calls it Saab because that's a lot more fun to say, Saab. He's actually got a little moniker there for it. But you look at it, there's a reason why his ERA is almost two full runs lower than his xFIP, is because his Saab, which, by the way, to be awful is 8%.
It's worse than that. It's 5.7%. He's striking out 10.7% of batters and walking 5. The walks aren't up. He's just not striking out anybody, and he's been exceptionally lucky so far. The problem with Jeremy Hellickson is that he's fool's gold. He does it every single year at some point. He gives you this little stretch, and people get fooled to buying in. I did it 2 years ago. I bought into Hellickson thinking, hey, you know what? Maybe I got a little something here for that last year he was with the Diamondbacks when he had a little nice little run there. And then last year he's got the ERA. But at least last year, he was striking out over 7 per inning. This year, it's not even 4. He's going to get destroyed, especially when you look at a BABIP of 218 and a left-on-base percentage of 85%. You don't strike out less than 4 people per 9 inning and have success at the major league level. It's not going to happen. His blow-up is about to come. Make sure you're not around for it.
Yeah, I luckily enough bought into him back in his Rays days and kept getting burnt that way. And so he's been on kind of my do not draft list for a long time. Completely agree with you. I don't know. I mean, he's never been a huge strikeout guy, at least not for a long time. They have completely disappeared. The velocity is a little bit down when you take away the, kind of the half tick, in terms of the hot gun. I hate the stadium. The team, while they are very interesting, I don't think they'll be competing for the long haul. So, you know, who knows what the chances, wins are going to come. I mean, what you mentioned is the really big thing. He is just getting so lucky right now. 218 BABIP, 85% strand rate. It's time to jump ship. If you've got Jeremy Hellickson and you can get anything right now of equal, you know, draft day value or maybe even better, do it, because I don't see this sustaining at all. Darius, what are your thoughts on Jeremy Hellickson?
Yeah, I have to agree. I know we've seen him sort of BABIP defy in the past, as you mentioned, but this is ridiculous. And the fact that he's got a 3.49 ERA, despite getting as lucky as he has, kind of tells you what's going to happen when he isn't getting lucky. So I think the strikeouts, even if he is going to have a mid-3s ERA, keep his upside so capped. And I just don't see how it's going to continue. So, yeah, if you can get anybody to buy anything of this, then go ahead. But, yeah, I would certainly run away, because these peripherals are some of the ugliest I think I've seen in a long time.
Chuck, what are your thoughts on Jeremy Hellickson?
No, no, and no. I hearken back to my disbelief when he signed that one-year deal, because the starting pitching market was gone this past offseason, and somehow he decided to sign a one-year deal when I'm pretty sure that he could have gotten a guaranteed 8, 10, 12, maybe up to $20 million more if he'd have just signed a long-term deal, and I have no idea why he did not do that. His ground ball percentage just keeps getting lower, and that's such a terrible park to pitch in for that, especially when you're not missing bats. So you guys calling him lucky seems like such a vast understatement. He's been way, way more fortunate than just that word implies. So, and he's the opposite. You know, he's got a 3.5 ERA and a 5.5 FIP, basically. So, if you have a staff where everyone else on your staff is really solid, which that's like chasing a unicorn right now, as far as I can tell. But if you have a staff like that, then you can take a guy like this and say, oh, well, as long as, you know, he's out there, he's got 4 wins already, as long as he's not doing too bad, I can keep him there. But if you're searching for any kind of upside, you are really, really looking in the wrong spot if you're looking to Jeremy Hellickson.
Yeah, and while I'm a big proponent of riding hot streaks or riding guys who are just, you know, getting some good luck at the moment, I tend to not want to do that with pitching, because they can, you know, usually you don't just bail out after one start, and two starts can just destroy you in the ratio. So, I mean, I'm not a big fan of necessarily always riding the hot streaks with pitchers, and Hellickson's not a guy I would do that with. Let's move on to a guy who's been the exact opposite of hot to start the year, and that is Carlos Gonzalez. Cargo has just completely sputtered to start the year. He's got a 194 average and a 296 slug. Jake, what are your thoughts on Cargo? Can he rebound?
Definitely can rebound. I'm a little concerned about how much. You know, the more I've been watching him, the more I've been wanting to dig into advanced stats. And if you go to the StatCast search, his good contact is not good at all. It's actually poor contact. So the percentage of balls that he's hitting with good contact so far is in line with Jose Reyes, Jose Peraza, Aaron Hill, Yanjervis Solarte. You don't want to be associated with those guys when you're Carlos Gonzalez, because as you can tell, those aren't power hitters. Those aren't guys that are making great contact every single time they come to the plate. To give you an idea, 0.89% of the time, 0.89% is when he's actually getting good contact so far. He's just, something's not right. And you used to be one of those guys that you just pencil him in. He's like, guess what? He's getting 25 home runs. If he can stay healthy, he's getting 80 to 90 runs. He's getting 90 to 100 RBI. He's Carlos Gonzalez. You know what he can do. The only question is, was he can stay on the field. I wish there was a stat out there. I know we have hard hit percentage, and I know that's down for him. I wish we could find one of bat speed, because that sounds like when you talk about the good contact that he's making and the fact that it's down there with those type of players, that maybe his bat speed is down, maybe he's aging, maybe there's something where he's not 100% and he's masking it, which wouldn't be a surprise if Carlos Gonzalez was hurt. But something's not right. And yes, he's been unlucky. Yes, you can look at the BAP and say things are going to change. But then you look at the line drive percentage, you look at the hard hit percentage, all these numbers that we can go to and say, let's see what kind of approach he has at the plate, what kind of pitches he's hitting, what kind of quality contact he's making. And all those numbers are concerning. It's not enough to the fact where I'm not still trying to buy him for the cheap, because I know there are a lot of panicking owners out there, but something doesn't seem right. And I don't know that we can necessarily pencil him in for 25 home runs and a 280 average anymore. I think we might have to consider, hey, we're going to be lucky if we get 20 at this point.
Chuck, what are your thoughts on Carlos Gonzalez?
Well, he's a free agent at the end of the year. And as much as I rail on the Oakland management, the Rockies management and their stockpiling of outfielders, especially left-handed hitting outfielders. You know, the worst part about this is that as bad as he plays, he's almost got to play anyway because he makes so much money. And, you know, he's 31 years old, and we make all these generalizations about aging curves and how it happens. And I always look back to remembering when Andrew Jones was, you know, a kid, and everyone thought, oh, he's going to be great for 15 years. By the time he was 30, he had toiled away in Asia for 2 or 3 years. I mean, it's just, it's really hard to tell. It's a guy who's beat up. He's been on the DL a lot. You know, last year was a down year. He is a guy that should get sat down at some point for all these different outfield prospects. And, you know, the Rockies are actually contending right now. So I don't know what there is to like. He's got a 102 ISO, 102. Now, you know, his 229 BABIP is unfortunate, but, you know, all the poor contact he's making seems to back up that exactly. And you know, he doesn't steal bases anymore. You know, 25 home runs from last year seems like a pipe dream, and 25 home runs is not what it used to be because everyone's hitting home runs. So, you know, I don't know what you do if you have Carlos Gonzalez besides put him on your bench and hope things start to change.
Darius, what are your thoughts on Cargo?
Yeah, on the one hand, I sort of felt like we've been here so many times before with Cargo, and, you know, everyone's lamenting him being in a slump, and then he comes out and hits 12 home runs in a month, and you know, anybody who traded him away or sat him for the games when he got hot is starting to regret it. But certainly I've been talking to a Rockies fan, shout out to Ben Carter, who writes on the UK site that I write for, said, you know, should we just expect another hot streak? And he seems pretty worried about him. He says he's hitting into the shift all the time. He reckons he could hit 220 this year, and just he shouldn't be starting against left-handers at all, basically. So to hear that from a Rockies fan who's watching him pretty much every day is a bit concerning. And I certainly do think that Jake's concern about maybe the bat slowing down could be a legitimate one, because right now he just hasn't been making any good contact. It's not that just that he's been unlucky. I think he's been hitting the ball very poorly. So there's always that thing in the back of my mind where I think, well, this is Cargo, and he could go off and have 2 or 3 incredibly hot months and look like the best hitter in baseball, and you'll be fine. But he is getting older, and I think there's a risk that this is part of the downswing. So even if he does get hot, maybe the Rockies then you know, start thinking about a move, because they've got so much outfield depth as well, that, and who knows where he ends up. So I think there's a lot of red flags here, and maybe if you can get somebody to buy on the name and on the hope of a bounce back, I might do that.
Well, yeah. Justin, here's the one. It's like, I think this is interesting, not to throw a question back at you, but like, are we having the conversation now of Altair versus Cargo, and is that a fair conversation to have at this point?
I think it is a fair conversation to have, because I don't want to say this is necessarily skill a skill decline, because I'm not quite buying that it's a bat speed issue. What I think it is what one of the issues that has plagued Cargo his entire career, except for the last two seasons. And because fantasy owners and fantasy analysts have short memories, we forget that Cargo has been an injury risk his entire fucking career. And I think he's hurt. And I think that is causing a lot of these problems. I think there's something obviously wrong with him. If he's not healthy, you've got to go with a guy like Altair. Now, I'm not dropping Cargo, because I just don't think you can do that, considering what you paid for him at this point. But, I mean, if it's like who am I starting this week, it's Altair until, you know, Cargo gets thrown on the DL or starts to come out of this. Because right now, there's no doubt in my mind that Altair is the better player. What are your thoughts, Jake?
Oh, I think that I would have to seriously consider, if I had Altair, is not trading him. Maybe if I have the depth, because you mentioned it before too, is at this point you're pretty much getting return value already for what you paid for him. So if you have a solid enough outfield, knowing, you know, what's been said is 100% true, is the fact that Cargo could always go on a month tear, a 2 month tear. It's about to warm up in Colorado, so we all know what he can do. But there's so many red flags here that if I'm not strong enough to take that risk, I might just sit with what I have. And to have that conversation is just shocking, because, and this is why I always tell people about the vetoes and stuff like this, is why you can never veto anything. The veto shouldn't exist unless there's proof of collusion, because if somebody would have thrown out this trade 3 weeks ago saying they saw this coming from Cargo and had a big faith in Altair and made this trade, they would have been winning out so far, yet everybody would have went bananas in the league and said, you can't make that trade. And yet, look at what we're talking about today.
And I think even if you made that trade today, everybody would still be doing that.
Probably, and unfairly so.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I just pulled up the NFBC draft results. Cargo was the 15th outfielder off the board.
Yep.
I mean, and like I said, in this moment, I'm taking Altair over Cargo, and I can't see why there's a reason not to. I'm still going to hold, like I said, I'm not selling. Because I just don't think you're getting anywhere near value. But, you know, if someone came to me with, like, I don't know, let's play a quick would you rather with Cargo. If someone came to you and said, listen, I want to buy Cargo, what's the price? And they offered you Lorenzo Cain, would you take Lorenzo Cain for Cargo? Jake?
Yes. Yes.
Darius?
Oh, the Royals look terrible, but yeah, I think I would.
Chuck.
He might not be on the Royals for long.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think I would.
He could be leading off for the Nationals not too distant future. Jake, you're a huge Keon Broxton fan, just like myself. Would you take Keon Broxton?
Ooh, not
you're starting to turn it up.
Yeah, look, I've been talking about Keon Broxton, you know this, and I kept mm-hmm. telling everybody, preach patience. I'd still probably take Cargo at this point, because my biggest concern is the Brewers do have options, and they have people just waiting the wings like Brinson, who just, anything goes wrong and you're getting sent down. They showed patience so far, but if Broxton goes for another 2 or 3 week cold stretch, they could end up on the bench with Perez, and maybe they call up Brinson. Like, they just have so many options that I don't think I'm ready to go that far yet.
Darius, would you take Keon Broxton?
No, I don't think I could do that. I do love the skills, but that strikeout rate is so crazy. I think that the risk of the cold streak is too high for me. And yeah, as Jake says, the options that the Brewers have elsewhere mean that he could easily get benched in fairly short order.
And like I said, the beginning of the season, Broxton could go 20, 30, 40 with homers, stolen bases, and strikeout rate. Chuck, what are your thoughts? Or would you take Keon Broxton, or would you take Cargo?
I guess, you know, I took Cargo over Cain because I think Cargo's got more upside. And at this point, I think Keon Broxton has more upside than Cargo. And,
I like it.
And he's also a Brewers fan. Don't listen to him.
I might be a Brewer fan, but I think I've been, you know, I tend to stay pretty realistic about the Brewers. And I do not think that there's any concerns. I've said it all along. I think that Domingo Santana would be the first outfielder that they would take out. You know, Council loves to run. He likes these athlete types, etc. They were overly patient with him last year. I know they sent him down, but they really had no choice when he was hitting like below 100. I disagree. I think Keon Broxton has a great chance to be a top 20 outfielder from here on out.
All right. Before we move on real quick, I just want to mention, looking at the NFBC ADP data, there is like a stretch of outfielders like 31 through 45 that have just been atrocious this year. You know, you can go check the ADP data and see who I'm talking about, but it's a really like murderer's row of everybody's third outfielder that just got, you know, that just sucks right now.
And if you want to have some real fun, go look at the pitchers that are on the DL right now.
Oh God.
From the top 50.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about Derek Holland real quick, because quietly he's putting together a really, really nice season. Are you buying this, Jake?
I am, because, you know, he looks like the Derek Holland from a bunch of years ago with Texas, and I think it was, I'm going to double check and look so I'm right on this. Yeah, 2013. It looks like the 2013 version. He's back to his old self of that, and it's not somebody who's going to give you a ton of strikeouts, but is he somebody that can give you a solid 3 ERA? Obviously, he's not going to hold a 2 ERA or a sub 3 at all, but a mid to upper 3 ERA with decent strikeouts. The win total, probably a bit of a concern pitching for the White Sox, but you're going to get decent numbers for him. He's limiting the home runs, which is nice to see, which is the same thing he did in 2013. And that's just what I'm going to keep going back to is if you look at the numbers, you see that the BABIP's a lot lower than it was 2013, everything like that. That's why his FIP is at 3.68. But if you look at it, if you just want an idea of what he's pitching like when you watch him, and this is some of the things like you can just look at a box score and get a different picture than actually watching the pitcher play. Derek Holland looks like Derek Holland from 2013, and I know that's 4 years ago, but he looks the exact same guy. He looks like he has the same skill set, the same pitching ability. He's managing the strike zone the exact same way. If you clone 2013 Derek Holland, I think that's who we have right now.
Darius, what are your thoughts on Derek Holland?
Yeah, I think that the skills certainly look pretty similar to that year right now. The main concern is kind of what's come in between for me, and that's the fact that he has pitched so little. And right now he looks healthy and he seems to be getting good results. But I do worry that we're not going to get so many more starts out of him just based on the previous few years of various injury struggles from him. But I think while he's pitching, his role in that rotation is obviously really safe, and there'll certainly be some regression back on his ERA. But I think he can be a pretty solid starter for you, certainly while he's healthy.
Yeah, velocity's up. He's not relying on the fastball, which he's attempted to do in years past. He's really relying on the secondary stuff. He's only throwing the fastball about 45% of the time, which is a little crazily low, but it's what you have to do at this. What he needs to do at this point in his career. The thing I kind of like about Derek Holland, aside from the stuff that Jake mentioned in terms of doing what he did when he was somewhat successful, is the fact that he is not going to be on the White Sox the rest of the season. They will trade him because they will, they're a rebuilding team. They are going to be looking for to move the pieces that don't fit their rebuild. And Derek Holland's on a one-year deal. It's a really cheap one-year deal, and they could easily look to move him to a contender that loses a starting pitcher. You know, the Mets, someone like that. So no matter where he goes, more than likely, unless he ends up in Colorado, which I guess would be a possibility, his value can only raise getting out of Chicago's home park. So I like Derek Holland, and he is available in like 80-something percent of leagues. Chuck, quick thoughts on Derek Holland.
Well, my quickest thought is the thought that you kind of stole from me, because I was going to fast forward us to a time come this fall when he's the number two starting pitcher for the Dodgers, because
they got too many injury prone lefties already,
but their entire rotation is paper mache after Kershaw and Urias, who they insist on using as a middle reliever, but he just happens to start the game. So my point being is that Derek Holland is a guy that's, pitching for a contract, et cetera, and so forth because of the one-year deal. He's pitching very well. The pitch mix has been pointed to in a number of spots, as it was Kier. And, I heavily invested in him in weekly fab because He's on a hot streak. He seems to be sneaking up on people. Like, it's almost like, you know, there's so much bad pitching on the White Sox right now that he sort of looks even better in contrast to who he's pitching around, besides Quintana's bouncing back a little bit now. So I'm all in on Derek Holland. He's only 30 years old. A lot of people probably thought he was older than that because his career started when he was so young. But I'm in on Derek Holland as one of those guys you're going to have to take a gamble on when you've lost, you know, three of your first five starters in a lot of your leagues, which a lot of us have.
All right. I want to really quickly talk about Ben Gamble before we wrap it up. I put him on this rundown before he had his monster day yesterday and won me some money in DFS. But I was a proponent of him early in the offseason before the Mariners made the deal to go get Jerod Dyson, and then I kind of had to, you know, cool my jets a little bit considering the playing time after they acquired Dyson and Haniger. But I've been a big fan of his previously. Jake, what are your thoughts on Ben Gamble's breakout?
I think it's nice for now, but we have to remember that he's probably going to be in a platoon with I just forgot the left fielder now, but you're going to get a platoon once Haniger is back, and that's the problem, is you're going to get the lefty-righty matchup, and that'll be good, nice for DFS, as you said, or maybe if you have daily transactions, you can hold on to him for that reason, but I don't think he'll be playing every single day. The good thing about him is that he did switch his batting approach in 2015, and actually, if you see that through the minors, that's when his quality of contact and his line drive percentage and everything started to go up, so he's definitely a better hitter. He's obviously not a 360 hitter because his BABIP's 500, but he can get closer to that 300 average like he did at the early part of his minor league career. He comes from the bloodline. I mean, you talk about Matt Gamble, somebody just was talented, just always hurt, so I think there's something to have here. I would definitely pick him up and ride him until Haniger's back. And then, like I said, if you're in a daily transaction league, you can enjoy the matchups. That's my biggest concern, is that he's not going to have an everyday job once Haniger's back.
Chuck, what are your thoughts on Ben Gamble?
I think he's a compiler. We were really pointed to him by Matt Thompson, who does a great job with our prospects, and really liked Ben Gamble a lot. So I had to send a thank you to him because I own him in multiple leagues already. And I can't help but feel like a lot of people right now are looking at players that are doing well and keep thinking that their time is going to dissipate. And they're really not on the kind of teams where there's no place for them to play. They're all on American League teams. This, you know, Joey Gallo and Ben Gamble. And there's just a number of these players that are playing really well that everyone's like, oh, well, their playing time is just going to disappear. And I have a hard time seeing that unless they take dramatic steps backwards, you know. And I know that there's people penciled in that should take half of Ben Gamble's playing time, but he's playing great defense. He's sparking the offense. He's, you know, he had a hit in his first at bat again today, so I don't know what he did after that because I'm trying to pay attention to us. But the point being is guys like this are doing an awful lot, and you're not talking about the Mitch Hanigers of the world, et cetera, are not guys with big contracts that, you know, they – Leonis Martin was supposed to be in the plan. He's not. This guy, that guy, everything else. I don't think the Mariners or the Rangers are the kind of teams that can sit down guys that are playing really well for guys that are not even established major league players. And I think that's, you know, I think that's where people are going wrong right now. So I would invest in guys like Ben Gamble and Joey Gallo. I don't know how people think they're going to sit. I'm in disbelief about that. So
I think you're grossly underrating Haniger then.
Oh, I don't. I think
I don't
Haniger's
think it'll
really
come at Haniger's expense. I think
neither do I.
Dyson and Guillermo Hirata.
How about Danny Valencia? See, I mean, they got a lot of bad hitters on that team.
Yeah, but Gamble also hasn't shown a propensity to hit lefties so far, and that's why I say when you have Heredia, who can face lefties, and he can face righties, that's my concern. Now, maybe, look, I'll agree with you. If something changes between now and then, and he's still hitting, I don't know, 280 against lefties by the time Haniger's back, Heredia's not going to keep him on the bench if he's doing that. My only concern is that he doesn't hit lefties between now and then, and then you end up with that platoon. But you're definitely right that he still has time. Haniger's not coming back tomorrow.
And I don't think necessarily even if he does become more of a platoon guy, that necessarily is a bad thing for him, because, I mean, he might be one of those guys that gets a little bit overexposed. But I think if he can get 75% of the playing time in the outfield in Seattle, this is a guy that could hit 290, hit 10 home runs and steal 15 to 20 bags. And I think that has value in virtually every depth of league outside of maybe 10 team mixed. So, I mean, I think Gamble, again, another guy that is widely available that you should go out and get. All right, that is going to wrap us up for this episode. We're going to cut it off a little bit, a couple of the guys off the list, just because we're running a little bit long. Jake, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate you guys having me.
Definitely. Tell people again where you can be reached on social media and give yourself some plugs.
Yeah, follow me at AllInKid. It's all one word for everybody. On rotoexperts.com every single week, doing fantasy baseball and football all year round. Daily on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, 11 to 1 for On Target on there with Joe Pizzapia and Ben Ricciardi. So listen in, give us a good review, download on Audio Boom, iTunes, Google Play, whatever. Just go listen to us. We're a lot of fun, just like you guys.
Definitely do that, and it's a free app on the Fantasy Sports Network, as you'll hear me plug, because I've got a show over there.
Yep.
So definitely download that, and there's no subscription base or anything like that. You can just download and listen, and it is a very, very entertaining show. It's definitely worth a listen. Chuck, tell us what you're working on and where you've reached.
Well, I finished up my weekly column again, and just like the All-In Kid over there, I've got another poker analogy in my writing today. I'm going to be in Las Vegas during the World Series of Poker this year, so I'm also a poker buff. But the point being is that just doing my stuff on Twitter and doing two podcasts a week and writing my little weekly column, and hopefully you guys are following it because I'm getting some feedback, which I appreciate. So it's always good to be here.
Hey, I may actually be in Las Vegas during the World Series of Poker this year, if I win my satellite.
Nice. Please do that. Play your cards right, brother. Play your cards right.
It hasn't worked the last, 5 years I've been doing it, but you never know. This could be the year. Darius, what are you working on? Where can you be reached?
So you can find me on Twitter at DariusA64. You can find me over at Batflips and Nerds, which is a UK-based site. We're doing a podcast every week at the moment. So if you want to hear some British guys talking about baseball and find out how little we know, then check that one out. And you can also find me over at Banished to the Pen. We've got a fun feature going at the moment, a weekly feature called the Garver Gazette, named after great pitcher Ned Garver. Who was on the Effectively Wild podcast once in a very entertaining appearance. So especially fans of Star Wars this week should check that one out, because there's a lot of Star Wars related baseball references that I think people would enjoy.
I will say, I mean, I don't know how much you guys know on that Bat Flips and Nerds podcast, but because it's British, it sounds really refined.
Yeah, that's what we're going for. The content is garbage, but all our accents are just excellent.
Fantastic. You can reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason, FWFB. Email me or the show, friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com. You can read everything I write over on friendsoffantasybenefits.com or over at Fangraphs, where I write 4 to 5 days a week. You can also hear me on the podcast here 3 days a week and on the Fantasy Sports Network on Thursdays, 9 p.m. Eastern, with Laura Michaels for the Tout Wars Hour. Yeah, that's about it. That's going to wrap us up for this episode. For Jake, Chuck, Darius, and myself, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season.